the driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people that really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going to Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host, Tony Merkel.
And I'm his dad, Brian Merkel.
And we're really glad that you're here. If you have a crazy and wild experience you want to share with us from the road, go ahead and shoot us an email. Our email address is hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. That's hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. Or go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com, and hit the contact section, and you can reach us that way as well. Either way works for us. Just get a hold of us. Dad, are you into emergency preparedness food?
I am.
Me too. And that's why we offer preparewithhll.com. That's preparewithhll.com, where you can get your emergency preparedness food, emergency supplies, everything that you could need in an emergency just about is on that website. We don't offer guns and bullets and stuff like that, but if you want food, we got you. And if you get the 4-week supply, we will knock $100 off for you right there. And if I remember correctly, we do have a sale going on the 2-week supply as well. I think it's only... Oh, I'm not even going to say on air because I'll mess it up and then people accuse me of false advertising.
Uh-oh.
But I do believe that there's a sale on the 2-week supply as well. But I was checking that out. And guys, I'm telling you, if you haven't taken it serious, I really suggest that you do so because it's about to get bananas.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So yes. Anyways, this week we're doing a short intro because it's my son's birthday and we're celebrating upstairs. And we wanted to come down and just say hi to everybody and introduce the show. So we're introducing the show. Right, Dad?
We are. Hello, everybody.
Yeah, so before we get into the show, though, I want to let everybody know if you want to leave a voicemail on the voicemail line and tell us a story that you want to share on the show, but you really don't want to come on the show, or maybe it's just not a very long story, we do have a voicemail line that you can call. It's 515-585-MERK. 515-585-6375. You get 15 minutes to tell us your story. Anything longer than that, just don't call back. Email me, and we'll have you on the show. All right, suckers? Right, Dad?
Right.
Right. So let's do this. Dad, who do we got coming on the show this week?
Today we're talking to Connor. He is a bus driver for rock bands and stuff like that. It just sounds like a really interesting interview, and it was.
Yeah,
it was
so really cool. People who have seen the Greyhound buses out there and public transportation, this guy drives around famous people.
He does.
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Let's get to it right now. All right, today we got Connor on the show. Connor, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here, dude. So, you know, you're up there in Massachusetts and stuff, and you got an interesting life, brother, from being in a band to being a roadie to being a tour bus driver, a CDL holder, all that stuff. And I'm excited to hear about all this stuff and even, you know, the UFO stuff. So
exactly.
Yeah. So, Connor, man, where are we starting here? Let's just start here. Let's start off with the band stuff, man.
Well, let's let Connor introduce himself a little bit about himself.
Yeah.
How, you know, I take it you do have a CDL, you know, if you're driving the bus. So, yeah, why don't you just kind of start from that point, you know, how you got into that and how you got into doing these types of things, and then we'll go from there. That way it gives us a little bit of a chance to get to know you.
Sure. Yeah, I'm 34. So I graduated high school in 2005 and was pretty much, directionless at the time. And it was go to night school, trade school. College wasn't really in the cards financially or as far as education goes. And, I started a punk rock band. I figured that was my ticket out. And, one of us bought a cheap van, bought a little single axle trailer, and then hit the road. And I was on the road with my own band for 4 or 5 years pretty consistently. We went all over the world.
Wow.
You know, humble beginnings. We, like I said, we had a little van and a trailer, and we're sleeping on floors and motels and stuff like that. But, you know, we went to Europe once. I went to Europe once with those guys, and, yeah, it was an interesting way to travel while the rest of my peers were in college.
Most definitely. That's actually really cool. They actually, you know, got a chance not just to travel this country, but travel other countries. That's really cool.
Right. And then, that sort of abruptly ended our touring schedule anyway, in about 2010. And I didn't know what to do. My parents sold their house. I had nowhere to come home to after tour. So I got a job as a pizza delivery guy. And then about 6 or 8 months of that, I said, I can't make it on this. You know, part-time, I had a little basement apartment, and, that wasn't really in the cards for me. So I started reaching out to some bands that we had worked with in the past, and they were like, yeah, you were a great guy to have on the road. You kind of knew everything that was going on, no drama. And, why don't you come work for us? If you can tune guitars and push some road cases around, we'd love to have you, and we can pay you, you know, we'll cover your rent or whatever for the month that you're gone. And, so I did that for a little while, and I kind of realized I liked driving the best. It was always in a van still, or maybe an RV. I didn't have my CDL at this time, but, I always liked driving the best. And some of the bands I was working for ended up on larger tours where they were maybe the opening band for a larger national band that had their own tour bus. And I'd always meet their drivers, and they'd say, you know, you seem like a good driver. You should get your license and, you know, come out here and make a real living. So after a couple of years of dragging my feet, I got it together, got my CDL, and went out and got a real job.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question before we go any further. You mentioned about touring in Europe. How does that come together for you? Because it sounds like you guys touring around the country, I assume you're probably booking your own gigs and stuff. I mean, did you have to do that in Europe as well? I mean, how does that happen? Because I can't fathom, like, one, booking tours around this country, let alone figuring out how to do it in Europe.
Yeah. And we, that was kind of handed to us. We had just put a record out in 2008, and did a couple of national U.S. tours, North American tours, and a bigger headlining band reached out to us and said, hey, we're going to Europe this winter. Would you want to come open for us? All you got to do is pay for your plane tickets. And that was actually our first and only time touring on a bus ourselves. They said, well, we pay for the bus. We, you know, we'll split the bus. In Europe, they have these double deckers that sleep like 20 people. And, so if you can get yourself to Frankfurt, Germany, the bus will pick you up. We'll have all the equipment will be rented. We'll print up t-shirts for you guys to sell. And,
wow,
we'll feed you. So yeah, that worked out pretty well. And it was an experience.
It sounds like it. I mean, it sounds like, you know, I mean, I don't know what else you could ask for in a band that, you know, is trying to come up, and you have another band offering to pay for everything pretty much outside the plane tickets. And that's huge.
That is. That's really cool.
Yeah. Man.
That is really cool.
Did you have a hard time dealing with the instruments and stuff? Like, they're not your personal instruments. So was it like one of those situations where it's like, I really don't like this guitar because of whatever reason?
No, we were able to submit like a request for what we kind of like to use, and the company in Europe will try to meet those demands best they can, but you get stuff that's been, you know, beaten up on the road,
mm-hmm.
you know, by a million different artists over the years, and who knows how well it's been maintained and looked after. So you get whatever you can, but it's, you know, it's rock and roll. You make do with what you can.
Right.
The show must go on.
Yeah. That's actually really cool. That is really neat. I guess one of the things I wanted to, that pops into my head is, what was it like? I mean, and if I can ask, would you be willing to say who you were playing with and your band name and who you were playing with when you went to Europe and all that? I mean, that's just kind of neat information. It's sure. Just really cool.
Yeah, my band was called Energy. Uh-huh. Like I said, we did national tours, North American tours mostly from 2006 to 2010. And the band that took us over there was a band from Boston, actually, called Slapshot. And we kind of looked up to them as younger kids. They were older than us, and they have a huge following in Europe as a kind of a legacy over there. So
very cool.
It was kind of an honor to be asked by those guys.
Most definitely, that's really cool. And how did you find Europe? I mean, did you enjoy your time there? Or was it? I imagine it was fun. I imagine you guys enjoyed it pretty much. But I wanted to hear
it was,
from you.
Yeah. It was definitely unique. I kind of think if we could do it all over again, we'd go back ourselves for the first time and kind of learn how to do it. But getting thrown out there and just thrown into their bus and kind of having it handed to us for the first time it's not really the traditional way to do it. It was great for us, but if we had kind of cut our teeth more like we did in the United States, then I think we would have got more out of it. But yeah, it's a culture shock. And at the time, it was I was the farthest I had ever gone from home. So
yeah, I've never left the country other than going across the border to Canada for the Niagara Falls. So
yeah,
home sweet home for me.
Well, we did that too. We did that a lot. We we'd play in Buffalo and shoot up to the border because we didn't need passports at the time. Around 2006 or 2007, we didn't need passports, and Mexico too. So we'd take advantage of that until things started getting more serious and we'd have to, have work visas and stuff like that. But when everything was kind of under the radar, we would just sneak across and, make a night out of it.
Yeah. And I know it was 2007 because I got married in 2007 and that was the last year you could go across the border without a passport. And, So I lucked out because everybody's talking about that. Nobody was really sure if you needed a passport at that time or not. And everybody, my parents, my wife, she's like, did you get your passport yet? I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
We're just going to wing it. Yeah. Here we go.
And I was just lucky.
Canadians are nice. They'll let us over. Yeah. They're friendly.
At the end.
Well, they're actually a little more lax about that on the southern end. We would go a couple of times. We parked the van in San Diego and meet with the promoter, and he would drive us over to Tijuana. And we do some shows there.
Really? So, I mean, was that after the mandate of passports?
Yeah, it was just chaos back then.
Man.
Yeah, I can
imagine. And we couldn't speak Spanish. The promoter with us would do all the talking, and they just wave us through usually.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. You're going to other countries. They speak other languages. And you just said, you didn't speak any Spanish. So did your audience understand what you were singing about?
Yeah, if they're familiar with the music or even just the genre of music, they're usually just happy to see you. They know kind of what it takes to get there, and they'll just kind of support you either way.
That's cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always wonder about that because you hear people going on world tours. I'm like, do they understand?
Well, yeah, I mean, the audience knows their music.
Yeah.
That's why they're going on a world tour.
I guess so.
Whether they're speaking Japanese or whatever, whatever country you're going to, they expect to hear you, and they don't expect you to sing in their language. They get that.
Yeah, it would probably sound pretty bad, I imagine, if you had to change your lyrics to the other countries.
Yeah, I mean,
it just doesn't have the same vibe to it.
Yeah. Yeah. In my head, I'm just thinking, I can't imagine Elvis learning, another language.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how old I am. I'm sorry, Connor. That's just, my age grouping. But anyway, that's actually really cool. You have had such an interesting life for such a young guy. I mean, you're only 34 and you have actually led a really interesting life. That's why I'm really looking forward to this interview this time with you, because it just seemed like the email we got was just really full of that's really cool. That is just this guy has led an interesting life. So where would you like to go from this point? Now that we've kind of got to know Connor a little bit and, you know, you kind of gave us a background on yourself, where would you like to go? What would you like to talk about?
What got me into driving most of the time was we kind of adopted this rule that whoever drove the van that day got to pick where to sleep, got first dibs on where to sleep. So whether we were in a hotel or crashing at somebody's house or, you know, sleeping on the floor somewhere, I would get first dibs because I always drove and I liked that way. If we stayed at somebody's house and they had cats and our drummer was allergic to cats, I'd say, you should have drove.
That sounds like a couple of guys driving around together.
Yeah. And, I got pretty good doing long hauls in the van and sometimes overnight and sometimes, you know, all day. I got pretty good with pulling a trailer and backing into alleys and parallel parking and stuff like that. And it just kind of became second nature.
So at that point, I mean, are you thinking about getting your CDL?
No, not really. But I kind of understood the relation there. You know, I'd be driving through the middle of the night and be like, wow, there's only other people out here are truckers.
Right.
You know, and I was always kind of fascinated with that. And I never really wanted to be a truck driver, but I didn't really know what else I could do except play bass guitar at the time. So I figured I got this all figured out. I can come home from tour with $100 in my pocket and pay my cell phone bill and wait till the next tour starts. So that's kind of how we lived for a few years.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to wrap my head around living like that. I've been married for 13 years, and my wife is a planner. Everything has to be organized and planned out and stuff. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. She would not survive that. And sometimes we'd go out with bands that would bring. They would try to bring their girlfriends and wives on tour, and they're, you know, because they kind of have this glamorous image of it, of what it's really like. And it's like, oh, you guys just drive from city to city and you're going to sit in this van or sit in this, you know, dingy backstage area, and you're going to shower in whatever that is. And, you know, it's like, yeah, this is how we do it.
Right.
Yeah. I've heard that, you know, touring around and stuff, it can get a little smelly.
Yeah. Well, yeah. even at the highest levels, you know, where I've experienced now, it's all the same.
Yep. Yeah, I can imagine. You know, it's not the thing you take the family along. It's not the family vacation that sometimes people think it is.
So after the band life, you got your CDL and you became a tour bus driver, right?
Yep. Well, in the middle, I kind of there was this company, I don't want to out them because it's kind of a gray area, but they would rent these giant RVs to bands. Uh-huh. And technically you didn't need a CDL to drive them.
Right.
And they became popular as tour buses got so expensive.
Sure.
It was just a step down from of a bus and a huge step up from a van or a Sprinter van. So I drove those a lot, and That's when I started meeting other bus drivers that kind of told me, hey, you'd probably make a pretty good driver. You should go get your license.
So you get your license at some point here, and was it like tour bus driving was the next step for you then?
Yeah, I kind of knew that's all I wanted to do. The more I did it at that level, I just knew that there was a pretty good living to be made doing something I actually enjoyed doing.
So what was it like driving around as a tour bus driver?
It's not what a lot of people think. It's a lot of driving through the middle of the night. You know, if you go to a concert and it ends, say it ends at 11 o'clock, mm-hmm. I'm at a hotel sleeping. I wake up at midnight and I'm back at the bus by 1 a.m. ready to roll, to the next city. So they can, you know, the roadies and local crew can start setting up for the next night.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's a lot of that. It's tough to get used to. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of cleaning toilets, cleaning up after people spilled drinks, changing bed sheets. I'm kind of like a hotel manager / maintenance all in one with a commercial driver's license.
Right. I just, in my head, I'm thinking you're like a hotel maid, a hotel manager, and a bus driver.
Whenever I stop at a truck stop and get fuel and water and whatever, I inevitably somebody comes up and asks who's on the bus, this big polished, shiny $1 million tour bus.
Right.
It's, is anybody famous on there? And it's like, nah, not really. It's just a bunch of guys with black t-shirts complaining about the Wi-Fi and drinking coffee.
Did you ever have anybody famous on your tour bus?
Oh yeah. We've done, I don't know. I don't want to mention a ton of names. I'll give you one because you guys are from the Philly area, but I did Hall & Oates a couple of years ago.
No kidding.
Wow.
That's awesome. That is awesome. That would be a cool ride.
But yeah, we've done all types of artists. The company I work for is in Atlanta, Georgia. And most of this industry is based in Nashville because of country music and gospel music.
Sure, Music City, USA, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just, you know, that's kind of the headquarters of it. So we don't get a lot of the country and gospel acts. We do a lot of rock and roll and some hip hop. And those are the types of tours I like to do where you're not doing Weekend Warrior stuff. You know, if you get signed on for a tour, you're gearing up and going out for 5, 6, 7 weeks at a time. Yeah.
So I'm kind of glad that you didn't give us any real names to these bands other than one, so that you can maybe answer this next question I have. What is it like dealing with some of the bigger name people? Have you ever had an experience where like they were just jerks to you, even though like, you know, you're driving them around and everything, they were just seemed very ungrateful?
Not so much. Most of the time the artists are pretty cool. Every once in a while you get a manager or a production manager that's kind of doesn't really look at you as a human. And whether or not that comes from the artist, you know, however they schedule things, I don't know. But yeah, most of the time the artists are really cool. If there's problems, it's with management or something like that. But
gotcha.
I haven't had any really bad experiences with any particular artist.
And I mean, everybody's relatively clean then? They're not like trashing your bus and stuff?
No, not at all. Sometimes they're horrific. Sometimes they are neat freaks. Sometimes it's a bloodbath. And like I said, you know, part of my job, at least once a week or every 10 days or so, I go in there and change their bed sheets. And it's like pulling off crusty socks and, you know, sweaty, wet bed sheets for some reason. You know, try to keep the bus presentable on my end, no matter how they like to live. So,
right. And you know, it all goes with the job. I mean, that's, you know, and I get that, you know, it's a job at the end of the day, no matter how you look at it, no matter what the outside world thinks of it, even guys like Tony and I, where, you know, you sit and you listen to this and it's like, that just sounds like such a cool job. You're like, that's gotta really be cool. But you realize, you know, after you've done it, it's like driving a truck. After you've done it for a while, it's just driving a truck and it's a job. And though you do get to meet really cool people and you get to really, you know, have experiences in your life, which is awesome. At the end of the day, it's still a job and you have a job to do. So, but it sounds, it does sound really cool. I mean, I just think that'd be, you know, to me, that's like, I don't know, probably the coolest job as a driver.
Yeah, it can be. You know, a great day out on the road with a good band, or, you know, a lot of times if we have a day off and plan to do something together, you know, there's nothing better than that. And that's a work day for me. You know, we could have a day off in Las Vegas and let's go see a show and hit the casinos. And, you know, that's part of my job. But then there's other days where I got to drive 600 miles and something breaks down, or I get a flat tire, and, you know, my hotel's overbooked, and you know, there's always stressors like that. But yeah, most of the time it's great.
It sounds like you work a lot though. It doesn't sound like you have a whole lot of time off.
I do. Yeah. Well, up until this year, I average about about 300 days on the road a year.
That is a lot of time away.
Yeah. And if you think of the normal, you know, 9 to 5 Monday through Friday job, that's, I'm working about 50 more days a year, 60 more days a year than the average worker. So,
yeah,
but it's a good living. You make good money and get to see the country.
Most of, and you know, I mean, you get to hang out with some pretty cool people.
Sure. Know? Yeah.
It's like a perk of the job. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, spend holidays and stuff on the road with them. I know last year I was with a ballet, a Russian ballet.
Wow.
And we spent Thanksgiving and Christmas together, which is, you know, you're on the road, you're probably in a hotel somewhere. I think for Thanksgiving, they kind of tiptoed around it because of my situation. I usually stay in a hotel every night or in the daytime. They're like, hey, we want to get a Airbnb house for Thanksgiving. Is that okay with you? Can you find somewhere to sleep? I said, yeah, absolutely. And we'll have a great, you know, family dinner of whatever 13 people that are with us. And you know, I'll get my rest and we'll get to the next city and do a show.
It sounds like there's a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, that's the name of the game. It's hurt us a little bit with the ELDs, but a lot of it is just saying yes to stuff and trying to figure out how to make everything work.
Man. So, you've been doing this, and then this actually kind of came to a halt for you because of what happened this year, right?
Yeah. I worked last year right up till New Year's Eve. I went home for a couple of weeks and then I went out for another month. And that took me into the middle of February. I got home and I bought a house. And then I told my boss, give me a couple of weeks. I'm closing on this house. I want to get moved in. I've had my stuff in storage for a number of years. And I said, no problem. I got a tour for you as soon as you get back. So I moved in, flew back down to Atlanta, got my bus ready. Picked up this artist. We did two shows and the whole rest of the tour got canceled.
Man.
Wow. That was whatever day that was, March 13th or 14th was the last day. And the phone in our office, I know, was ringing off the hook. Hey, we're canceling. We got to pull out at least for a couple weeks. We're sending the bus back. What do you want to do with the driver? What do you want to do with the bus? And I called my boss and said, listen, I got to drop this artist off in Toronto. Instead of driving back all the way back to Georgia, do you want me to just take the bus home? And he said, yeah, because I'm going to have a full parking lot. You know, even in the dead of winter, we don't have every bus not working. We always have something going on. So I had my bus parked at my house, my brand new house. My neighbors that I hadn't even met yet. I see this tour bus pull into the little cul-de-sac and he said, yeah, this is what I do. We don't know what's going on. So this thing's going to be sitting here for maybe a couple of weeks, maybe a month. It ended up being about 3 months before I brought it back. So
are you still out of work then?
Yeah. Massachusetts has very generous unemployment. So I've taken advantage of that. I'm really getting stir crazy. And I've talked to a seated coach company that does, they're doing some COVID. I don't know what to call it. I'm transporting nurses back and forth from hospitals. Yeah, and I'll be doing
like a medical shuttle.
Yeah. But to keep everybody in the same bubble.
Sure.
I'll be doing that for a little while. It's open-ended. It could be a week. It could be till March. It could be, you know, who knows. But, you know, that's not really what I love to do. I love being on the road and being in a different place every day. So we'll see how long I can do that for. But it's better than just sitting around the house.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Is there any word yet at all as to when things might begin? I mean, being on that end of the business, do you guys ever get any kind of word as to what's happening as far as when things will start opening back up? Are they thinking early next year or something like that?
The artists, I know most of the artists are very eager to get back on the road. You know, that's nowadays, it's really how everyone makes a living, by selling tickets and selling t-shirts.
Sure.
So I know everybody's eager, but nobody wants to really be the first one to do it, to test the waters. So it's kind of going to have to be, you know, a consensus where everyone agrees, okay, now's the time. We can sell out these venues and pack bodies into a room and make it financially work for everybody.
Right.
But yeah, no, I mean, we've never had anything like this.
Yeah.
So.
It sounds like you guys may not be back in action until you start seeing like, the NBA putting people in the seats.
Right. Yeah.
Is there any fear that you could lose your job?
No. The big fear is that the bus companies themselves are going to start losing assets, you know, new buses. Oh. I know my boss just bought 5 new buses this year.
Wow.
And that's, you know, you're looking at almost $1 million each.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So he might basically not be able to pay those things and have to give them back.
Yeah, or try, you know, trying to sell it off the old ones to pay some bills. You know, the monthly nut on a $900,000 vehicle is, you know, through the roof. So
I can imagine.
And insurance and everything. But yeah, they're scraping by with whatever, you know, PPP loans mm-hmm. were available. We did you know, being an election year, we did a handful of politicians' buses,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. But another big thing a lot of companies get involved in is with the hurricanes that hit down in the Gulf, we'll send a handful of buses down there to house volunteers, you know, because they got power, Wi-Fi, shower, you know, running water. You can house the volunteers that are doing cleanup, hurricane cleanup.
Right. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I like that humanitarian effort that goes on. That's really neat. That is.
Yeah. And fantastic. It's rare in the middle of summer, you know, to have all these companies with buses available. Usually we're completely sold out.
Yeah.
So, where does this UFO experience you had come into play? I'm looking at the
enough
email
of the
here.
Business end.
Well, I'm looking at the email here, and I'm like, talk to me about this UFO or UFOs, as you said.
Well, I got a funny Bigfoot story after too.
Oh well, let's start off with the Bigfoot story.
Okay, so I was on this festival tour with probably about 30 tour buses and I don't know 20 or so semi trucks. Run from city to city every day doing big amphitheaters, but we'd set up out in the parking lots. And we were leaving one night, probably about midnight, 1 a.m, a place in Ohio called Blossom Music Center, which is right on the edge of the Cuyahoga National Forest. And somebody on the production team had gotten like a gorilla or a Chewbacca costume, and where their bus was the last one to leave, as all the buses are creeping out of the parking lot, he was creeping in the bushes.
Uh-huh.
And every fourth or fifth bus that would drive by, he would dart in front of it as we're pulling out of this National Forest parking lot, and nobody said anything. That was it was the strangest thing. Nobody acknowledged it, but everybody saw it. And I never found out who the kid was, but the next morning, you know, we get to the next city, whatever it was. We all go in for breakfast catering. It's like 7-8 o'clock in the morning. We're all under this big tent and everyone is just kind of shifty eyed looking at each other. Like who's going to be the first one to mention
yeah.
this? And finally someone did. And everybody shouted, "What the hell was that? I saw that too. I thought I was going crazy. Was that a bear? Was that a guy?" And it turned out it was just one of the guys on the production team pulling a prank, but that was really funny. I know everybody was driving that night through the dark, just going, "What the hell did I just see? Should I say something? Everyone's going to think I'm crazy. They're going to take my driver's license away."
Everybody's driving the rest of the night. Just keep with their eyes, both eyes wide open,
yeah.
looking for anything else to shoot across the road. Oh, that's freaking hilarious.
I think it's funny that nobody said anything. It's like, I mean, it's classic, though. I mean, when you hear people talk about seeing these things, like a lot of times they just go unheard. I mean, they don't talk about it. They're like, I'm not going to say it. I'm not saying
nothing.
I didn't see nothing. Not one thing. Carry on.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So who was it that put a UFO suit on and flew around?
Well, this was a strange one. Usually, you know, with a band or a singer, we're driving city to city. It's all interstates. But this particular one, I was with a Mexican artist, and we were driving from Denver, Colorado, all the way to, like, McAllen, Texas, like the southern tip of Texas. And we stopped about halfway. I think it was Lubbock or Abilene, Texas. But we cut through these back roads coming out of Colorado into New Mexico. We cut through these back roads to get into Texas. And it's probably 5 a.m, maybe 6 a.m. The sun is just starting to come up. There's two buses. We're rolling together. And we see these two things in the sky that look like, I think the best way to describe it is like not really a disc shaped, but like kind of exaggerated top to bottom. If it was a disc, I would call it like a badminton shuttlecock, and kind of a cone shaped, you know, upside down. And I know we both see these things, and we're driving for about 20 or 30 minutes. And finally, the other driver calls back on the CB radio. He said, "Do you see these things?" I said, "Yeah, I've been staring at them for about 20 minutes. I don't know what they are." And we're out, I mean, the middle of nowhere, just 2-lane roads, no civilization. And he's like, "Yeah, I've been watching these things. They haven't moved this whole time. And they're close enough that you could see if they were moving." And he said, I have my small aircraft license, and I've never seen anything like that or read about anything like that. It's not a helicopter. It's not a plane. We don't know what these are. I don't think it was extraterrestrial. I think it was some type of experimental or military thing, because you could see the propulsion. You could see the thrust coming from the bottom of them, however they were hovering. And as we were talking about them, they started to move. So I don't know if they could hear us or knew we were watching them, or realized, hey, there's two buses down there in the middle of the desert. They're gonna be hit to what we're doing. But yeah, it wasn't until we started talking about them on the CB radio that they started to move. And they didn't dart away like they were hiding from something. They just started to drift off, whatever they were.
That's interesting. I always, like, when I hear these UFOs that people see and stuff, you always wonder after they're done telling the story, you know, is it extraterrestrial or is it, you know, more experimental, governmental? You describing the thrusters like that, I mean, that does definitely sound more mechanical of an earthly variety.
Sure. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But given the territory we were in, northeast New Mexico, I mean, who knows? It could be anything out there.
So it was New Mexico. It's funny you bring that up, because we just interviewed a guy who was in New Mexico and saw something strange flying through the sky as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I guess New Mexico has a lot of funky stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, where's Roswell?
Well, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I've been to Roswell.
Yeah.
And it's driving in there, it's kind of a nice drive. It's you know, not a big city.
Right.
But you get there and everything is real touristy. They have a museum and... Mm-hmm. You know, UFO burger and stuff like that.
Right.
So, and it's taken on kind of a silly connotation, but yeah, it's a nice little town. Who knows what actually goes on there?
Yeah. One of these days I wouldn't mind making it out to Roswell. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah. I think it'd just be kind of cool to go to the Southwest, you know, that whole area, Arizona, Roswell, Texas.
Is that a place that you would consider retiring? Like that area? Connor, by the way.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I love it. I love it up in the Northeast. I've been here my whole life. And, you know, it's nice to be able to travel. see all the big cities and everything in between. But yeah, I like coming back up here.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because I mean, with somebody as somebody who travels all over the place, especially the way you travel and stuff, it's not like you're in a truck all the time, just kind of sleeping at truck stops and things like that. You're kind of out and about, and so I wondered if there's another place you'd like to kind of live other than where you're at now. But you know, no place like home, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that is another perk about driving entertainers. You really are going city to city. You're not going, you know, terminal to terminal or truck stop to truck stop. It's like, yeah, I get into these cities and I know all about the local places to eat and, you know, what the good hotels are and stuff like that. So it's nice to be able to do that and then still just come home and have a normal life for a little while.
Yeah. Are you like a, what they would call a foodie? I mean, do you have like these particular places you would go to? Like every time you go into a city, you're like, I'm going to this place because the food's like on point.
Yeah, sometimes. I'll ask the guy, you know, if we go to the venue and drop the band off, whoever's my Uber driver or whatever taking me to the hotel, I'll ask them, you know, what's good around the hotel, or what's the best barbecue here or whatever. And they can usually tip you off.
I gotcha. So what's the wildest thing you've experienced out in the road? I mean, is it the UFOs, or I mean, have you ever seen any kind of like crazy thing happen out on the road while you're driving, like accident wise, or were you in an accident or anything?
I've had a couple of close calls. One that comes to mind is I was driving this wrapper, and on a smaller scale, the wrappers don't really travel with a ton of production. It's just, you know, a microphone and a PA system, and they can do a show. So we didn't have to drive overnight all the time. We could stay at a hotel and check out at 8 a.m. and get to the next city by dinner time, and he could just go in and sound check and do his show. So for that whole tour, I was driving mostly during the day, which is really foreign to me. I'm driving and going, where all these cars come from? This is my shift. I'm the one working here. Why are these people out in my time? And we were driving from Syracuse, New York, up to Portland, Maine, and through a blizzard. I mean, just all day long, just snow and slush and real nasty. And it was a couple of days before Christmas, because Portland was the last day of the tour. They were all flying home the next day. And I'm driving up about an hour from Portland, Maine. Dark, you know, I-95's dark. It's snowing. Cars, I'm in the center lane making my own tracks with the bus. And I got cars creeping along in the right lane going 20 miles an hour and cars going 70 miles an hour in the left lane. And I'm just keeping it steady on my own. And this minivan passed me and cut right in front of me, which is scary because I got a 50,000 pound bus. I don't know if they're going to stop or try to take this exit that they missed or whatever. I'm plowing right into them. And as they cut in front of me, they started to slide and fishtail. And at a certain point, all I could do was just take my foot off the gas. I didn't want to slam on the brakes because I might end up sliding too. But at a certain point, they had turned completely perpendicular right in front of the bus. And I'm still going about 40, 50 miles an hour. And they said, well, this is it. I'm gonna kill this family, you know, 2 days before Christmas. This is going to be awful. And just at the last second, their tires caught and they spun around again into the left lane. And I just zipped right past them. And one of the guys in his crew was sitting next to me. He's like, geez, man, you must have to deal with this all the time. And I said, yeah, not really. Usually I'm driving at night. It's a ghost town, which we prefer. But yeah, that was one close call I can remember, especially, you know, due to weather. It's always something.
Yep. Yep. You know, I mean, I drive at night. I know exactly what you mean. I am so used to driving at night. And I so many times, yeah. I'll say to Tony, because he's a daytime driver, I'm like, I don't know how you guys do this. I mean, I got to come back through, like, you know, his terminal in the morning or whatever, you know, I'm coming up from Baltimore and I got to go through, you know, the Phoenixville area. and it's close to Philly. And I'm just like, I don't know how you guys deal with the traffic. I don't know how you deal with these people. This is just crazy. I'm so used to just being, you know, trucks, a few, you know, handful of cars, and, you know, me.
Yeah.
And it's a lot nicer. Man, I tell you what, you hit, you know, you start hitting, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, traffic starts picking up. So yeah, I can appreciate what you were going through with that one. And it seems to me, doing this for as long as I've been doing it, it's like the weather gets worse, the driving gets worse. Mm-hmm. As in the drivers, they just don't slow down. They don't pay attention to what they're. I don't know what goes on in people's heads. You know, I really don't. And I don't mean to be dismissive of people. It's just when it starts to snow, start being a little more cautious.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, especially in places like in the Northeast where we do get snow and, you know, everyone grew up driving like that. You should know by now.
Yeah. Yeah. I
get it when Nashville gets 2 inches of snow and they close all the schools. Yeah, and
they don't know how to handle it.
Everything's
right.
Shut down for a week. Yeah. I understand that because they're not used to it, but you know, and that's also helped me, especially out on the West Coast or out in the mountains in Canada and stuff. Where I'm like, yeah, I'm good enough in the snow. I can, you know, I can put on chains or those snow socks if we have to. But I'll get us through this. And you know, as they say, the show must go on.
So right.
If you can do that, and the client never wakes up and has to know what happens, then you know that's a good day.
It's a win.
That's a win. Yes.
So you just mentioned about Canada. I assume going into Canada, are you going deep into Canada? I mean, how is it like navigation wise? Is it hard to find places once you cross that border?
Yeah. I mean, I have a commercial GPS that'll get you where you need to go. But yeah, we go all over Canada. And most of the time, that Canada, I think, has a rule about their work visas for drivers or the vehicles themselves, that if you have, you can't book an entire Canadian tour and not use a Canadian bus. So most vans will dip back and forth a couple of times. You know, we'll start out in Portland and Seattle and go up to Vancouver and then do Western Canada, probably dip down into North Dakota, Minnesota, mm-hmm. do a few shows, and then back up through Michigan into Eastern Canada.
Isn't it funny how they create laws and rules and we just find ways around it anyways, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, what you need to do.
It's like, you want to inconvenience me? It's okay. You're not. We'll just figure it out.
We'll make it work.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it's been an interesting ride for you, man. It really does. Starting out in the band, driving around and becoming a roadie, and then driving, you know, these tour buses and stuff. Do you see an end in sight at all? Or is this like, this is going to be your career because you just enjoy it?
Yeah, I love it. It's driving me crazy the past 8 months, not being out there, but, it's nice to have a break. It's nice to come home, but however, 14, 15 years, I've never been home this long
and
you know, all at once. So I've always, made my way on the road.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, a month is a nice break. 8 months is after a while.
Yeah. Well, we can always look forward to a slower winter. You know, my company has a few contracts that go out in the winter, like the family shows like Disney on Ice and Sesame Street and stuff. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the rock bands, they don't want to tour in the winter anyway.
Right. That makes sense.
So, yeah, it does slow down in the winter. And, you know, if me as a driver or my bus is in demand and somebody has to be on that bus, I'll be working, you know. I have no need to take time off, really.
Gotcha. That's cool.
Well, Connor, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing about this stuff, man. It's been interesting.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Oh, it really has been. It really was fun listening and just getting a chance to talk with you about all the things you've been doing.
He's making me think about a career change.
I know, right? That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm thinking to myself, well, what the heck? I'm like 52. Am I too old to drive around?
It's prime, man. It's prime.
No, you know what? Brian, you're in a good situation because if your kids are growing up.
They are.
You've got.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, and you're used to driving at night. Yeah, you can make it work.
Heck yeah.
Tell mom you'll see her in a month.
That's a thought. You know, it really is. You know, it's one of those things that you start, yeah, you get to a point, it's like, I've done this now for 27 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's time for a change.
And I imagine a tour bus is probably more comfortable to drive than the rig.
It's, you got
lazy
it's
boy
easy to drive, you know.
Yeah.
It floats down the highway at 70 miles an hour, but you got to be really, really smooth because you got people sleeping on there.
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I hear that. Very cool.
That's one thing a lot of truck drivers don't appreciate. You know, I might zip past you on a straightaway on the highway, but when I pull into a truck stop and there's potholes and, you know, tire divots in at the fuel island,
right?
I'm going 1 mile an hour. Sure. You know, I want to rock somebody out of bed.
Makes sense.
That would be the worst.
It's the last thing you need.
You hear a thud. Dang it.
Well, last year in Illinois, I hit a deer. Or was it Illinois or Wisconsin? I hit a deer going down the road, and I sent my boss the dash cam shot of it. And all he said was, "Wow, you kept that thing pretty steady." You know, you look at the white lines going down the road. You see the deer coming in from the side. Mm. I didn't even flinch.
Yep.
Bye-bye, yeah. Deer.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the name of the game.
Yeah, bye-bye headlight, bye-bye front bumper.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the name of the game, though. That is the thing. When something like that jumps out in front of you, don't swerve, don't slam the brakes.
Yeah.
It's all you can do. Just let it happen.
They made their decision.
But no, it really was cool talking with you, Connor. And we really do appreciate you coming on. It was, honestly, it was a very cool conversation. I was glued to listening to what you were talking about because I'm fascinated. That's an end of driving that I've never had an opportunity to really talk to somebody who drives a bus, you know, and does this, you know, on a large scale.
I never really thought about it either because, I mean, like, when we would tour for basketball stuff, I mean, we'd be on a tour bus and there's a driver that shows up, but I never really thought about that person and what their life is like. I just never thought about it. But yeah, I mean, it's nonstop. I mean,
right.
It's from one thing to another. Like he said, I mean, he's working over 300 days a year.
Right.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That is. No, that's cool.
All right, Connor. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, guys.
Well, that's the show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. Dad, if they enjoyed it, what can they do?
They can share the show.
Share the show.
Share it with your friends and your family. Share it on Instagram. Share it on Twitter. Share it on Facebook. Join the Facebook fan page. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to see you there. Talk to us. Talk to Lindsay, Jackson, Dylan, Josh, myself.
Not me.
Not Tony.
I'm not on Facebook anymore. But if you do want to find me, I'm on Twitter a lot. A whole lot. Now, I say edgy things on there, so I'm just giving everybody a heads up. I don't really sugarcoat anything. In fact, my bio reads this: I take shots at your sacred cows, I dance with skeletons in closets, I point at elephants in a room and make a mockery of heroes. So that's kind of the attitude of the Twitter account. But if you want to follow me on Instagram, you can do that as well, at Murkification. That's my personal. And you can also follow me at Rage Against Dystopia, Rage_Against_Dystopia. It is a new account I just started where I'm just basically dumping a bunch of conspiratorial type stuff, where it's basically me pointing to the evidence of a future dystopia coming. Yes, friends, anybody who's listening to this show that doesn't know me very well from the other show, I'm very much a conspiracy guy, and I very much believe we're heading towards a dystopic society, and I very, very, very much believe that the things that are happening in 2020 are designed to lead us there. Until next week, friends, keep the hammer down in the hammer lane. Bye! Wow. That came out of nowhere.
It did.
Well, that's the show, buddy. We really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, hey.
You know what? Just share the flipping show. We're done.
We're done.
That's what cake will do to you.
I'm friggin' tired. Well, that's the show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, let me know in the comment. That's the wrong show.
Yes, it is.
You get 15 minutes to tell us your story. Anything longer than that, just don't call back. Email me, and we'll have you on the show. All right, suckers? Now, Dad, what can we do for the...
threat suckers.
You know.
We love our audience, can't you tell? We do love our audience.
We do love our audience.